So thanks so much for coming and doing this interview, Mike. Would you like to give a little bit of an introduction for yourself and tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure, thank you. Thank you, Sue. My name's Mike. I'm an Aboriginal man from the Gumbaro Nation, which is located in northwest New South Wales. Lived over in Adelaide for over a decade now. Historically, I was what's called a forgotten Australian. I was in institutional care as a child, and I have two daughters, one age 18, which means I'm really old now, apparently, and a 15-year-old, and I'm involved in the Anti-Poverty Network, South Australia, and as of the AGM, which happened a month ago, I was elected as for the new role of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Convener for the Anti-Poverty Network, and that's where I'm sitting, Sue, at the moment.
And that's fabulous. We really need to have an Aboriginal coordinator.
Basically, when the proposition was put to me, Sue, is that I hadn't actually had any Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander as influence into the Anti-Poverty Network about terminology. And cultural awareness, and so I'm glad to come in as a new role, and you're giving us the first role. It's just a new role, and it's mine to create and develop in the right way.
Starting from the ground floor, that's excellent. You'll be able to shape it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And at the end of the day, I'm very conscious of that. Succession planning, so we're shaping the role.
Yes.
Because the interpretation that'll be effective in my mind's view, taking input from other people as well is very important, and allowing the role to be ebbed in with a new person to replace me eventually.
Yes. So you'll be aware that I'm working on this podcast program called Adelaide Chronicles, and it's essentially about the stories that shaped Adelaide or Tangalanga.
Sure, absolutely, Sue.
Yes, and named after a queen. Yeah. Yes, but also named as a gathering place for the
Kangaroo. The Kaurna people gathered on the plains, didn't they?
Yes, and so the stories that shaped this place that we all live on.
Yes,
and work on and raise our families.
Absolutely.
So. That's what I'm trying to do, and that's a lot of stories.
Absolutely. So I've got the Anglo aspect of family, which is actually Scottish descent. Yes. They settled, free settlers in Adelaide, and then it's the Aboriginal side, which is interstate. So the stories just in the Scottish side of the family in Adelaide, they've got so many stories that
we'll never get told, unfortunately. But what we're hoping to do is to start with asking 50 people to give us their vision of what it might look like. What it might look like to have a sustainable, inclusive future.
Sure.
And one that respects the first people.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So if we have 50 people's views...
You get diversity. You get diversity with the 50, don't you, Sue? There's quite a diversity. People have their own perspectives, their own utopia worldview, and then we can actually morph into with the 50 into a commonality.
That's right. And then we want people to comment.
Sure.
And from there, we sort it out into categories, so we can have all sorts of Indigenous wisdom included.
Sure. Absolutely.
The colonial era included.
Can't deny all of that.
All of the, and telling a true history.
Yeah.
And for all of the people that are here now, we all have a history.
Absolutely.
In some way.
And as you know, it's not only Aboriginal people, which is typically not acknowledged. Historically, it was free settlers from the United Kingdom that settled here, but now we have a diversity of many other ethnicities that have settled in Adelaide and shaped Adelaide through migration.
Yes. There's been a whole range of things. So it's an ongoing project that will outlive me and outlive, I hope, we'll keep
May
on going.
Keep going forever, hopefully.
We'll keep going forever because we'll continue to shape.
And change.
And we all want a sustainable future.
Too true.
We all want to be good ancestors.
Absolutely. Yes. Well, like, as I said, I've got two daughters. I'd like to leave the world that they can inherit a lot better than we used to do and still do. And their children.
Yes, absolutely. So if you closed your eyes and thought about it, what would you come up with? What would it look like?
Well, in my I love the use of the word utopia, the utopic worldview. It's about having a society that values all the citizens equally and gives everybody equal opportunities as well. And then we also look at, with that utopic worldview, that people have adequate housing, adequate food, resources they need, and jobs if they choose to need jobs, and education. This is vital as well. So it's about being fair to everybody instead of segmenting the middle and high class people that get majority of the lion's share of resources, and the low socioeconomic background people get basically nothing, essentially. Exactly. So it's about fairness and equity.
And our capitalist system that we live under at the moment now, you have to have poor people to have rich people.
Well, it's a fundamental component of the capitalist model. In capitalist economic theory, if you don't have poor people, capitalism doesn't work. Mm. It's not capitalism anymore, something different.
Mm.
Which is shameful. It's a shame that people have to, you've got to have marginalised people for people to be better off.
And wrong. There's no equity
and
there.
And wrong.
Mm. Mm. So that's a beautiful way of seeing a future.
Mm.
Do you have any ideas of how we can get there?
The first thing is about listening to people, listening to their life stories, see where they're coming from, and then asking them the pertinent and relevant questions to get the viewpoints. And viewpoints of all citizens, if we go back to the utopic worldview, poor people have opinions and poor people have good opinions, as do people from other socioeconomic backgrounds. So asking the right questions and giving an opportunity to shape the populace, to shape the direction we're going, and also reflecting on First Nations people who were the traditional custodians of the Adelaide Plains region, the Kaurna people, and they are the living custodians to this day, and allow them to shape a city on the plains that they've looked after for thousands of years and looked after very well.
And it's an amazing thing that we've almost turned a
circle.
We're back to thinking, oh my goodness, we need to look at Indigenous wisdom.
Absolutely. If you look in state historically, pre-1900s, where white people didn't listen to Aboriginal people, they flooded in Gundagai and almost models died because they decided on a riverbank to put a town, and the Aboriginal people said, no, this flood's it. And they mass wiped out, mass deaths. But even though they ignored the Aboriginal people, one of the guys said he actually got in a canoe and was arresting white people who didn't want anything to do with him. So he felt a humanity and compassion and empathy for the white people, even though they didn't reflect back to him the same. So he was a true hero.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They do have a plaque in Gundagai for him, but I think he deserves more than just a plaque.
So I wonder what it would be like, say, Adelaide, because we're here, what it would be like if I don't like the word settlers, if the people that came here.
Sure.
If they listened to the Aboriginal people, if they looked at the way that they were living and eating seasonally and eating. Yes. If they had have done that, I wonder what it'd look like now.
Yeah. I think it'd be vastly different.
Vastly different.
Yeah. We wouldn't have everybody living on top of each other, and we wouldn't have things growing in grounds that were never meant to be in this region at all. So we've actually altered climate to suit what was. You don't love the word settlers, I'm not comfortable. The people who came, they wanted certain fruit specials and so on, and which would never achieve right here. Aboriginal people didn't have the concept of owning land. So it's about looking after and nurturing and being custodial for land. So that would be a utopic world for that to happen. People in our society now need to buy houses or be in houses, but actually creating green spaces is very important for a city to have green spaces and more of, and going back to having more of native animals, plants and trees and some flora and fauna that's been basically decimated from the city region. And I think that would be a very, very good start. And then encourage people to go and learn and immerse themselves in that environment rather than sitting in front of the flat screen TV or the internet.
Yes, you'd have the things that belong to you.
Absolutely.
The things, the people, the flora and fauna, everything that belong here.
Yeah, and you know, most Aboriginal people, if you ask them a question about something about flora and fauna, they will actually tell you. Mm. You know, they're not standoffish and say, this is our business, we don't tell you nothing about that. They'll actually tell you, and they enjoy telling. There's an incredibly strong connection to land and what comes on that land to Aboriginal people, although often in cities there's a disconnect. And if you look at the, I'll pick on the Anglos for a second, there's even a disconnect of Anglo people in the modern sense of cities versus what it was a few hundred years ago. Mm. So Aboriginal people with migration to city and settle in cities also have a disconnect, but they're still people that have a very strong connection. And they, and able to explain how things interrelate animal-wise, plant-wise, and so on. And Aboriginal people also, well, First Nation people, I should say, that be inclusive, hand down knowledge by stories. And generation upon generation upon generation of wisdom is passed down. And it should, yeah, I think it's about sharing that knowledge and allowing Aboriginal people to share the knowledge just so they can reclaim the proudness they used to have as well.
Again, the whole concept of story has come a complete circle, hasn't it?
It's absolutely. And yeah, I think there's great that you said a complete circle, because we look over 200 years, it went particularly just one direction. And there's been, I think it's just been a bit more of awareness, and that's allowed to come in that 360. There will always be people that will be wanting to marginalise Aboriginal people, but at the same token, they want to marginalise anybody that's different to them. So it's not only Aboriginal people, just black people, just easy to see and to discriminate against. But the same sort of people that the discrimination Aboriginal people discriminate against Asians and discriminate against Indians and discriminate against non-heterosexual people, so the gay, lesbian, transgender people have discriminated against and so on. So, but back to the 360, there's certainly great awareness and that we're talking about. We have a dialogue about the values, beliefs and so on, and that feeds right into the Aboriginal way of thinking and how we pass down stories from generation to generation. It starts with that dialogue, which is happening now from the general population.
And that's what I hope Adelaide Chronicles will become.
I'm looking forward to see. Story. I want to follow this one. Yes. This is going to be brilliant.
So, if you were appointed to the position of unlearning coordinator.
That's a bit, well, Jesus, that'd be a big one, wouldn't it?
That'd be a good one. Mm. Where would you start?
Ooh, I think
where some of the myths that have become almost habituated into our lifestyle, if to change them, what would you do?
Yep, we need to get communication between people who know the truth, to share the truth. But we also, I think we need to bring up the myths and name them. So if we don't name them, you can't actually change what you don't acknowledge. So the myths need to be addressed and say and provide the evidence, be it oral tradition for Aboriginal people, since you're talking about tens of thousands of years, to clarify what the myths are. And also with the unlearning is making it very clear that unlearning and changing wrong belief systems is not a shameful thing to do. It's not a mistake you've learnt wrong. It's a mistake if you don't acknowledge it and won't change if you present it with evidence that proves otherwise. So it's about great awareness and understanding what the correct facts are and versus the not so correct. Or incorrect.
I really like that answer, because if you go about saying, well, this has to change, nobody will.
No, they won't do it. They won't do it at all. So people have to have ownership in the change themselves. And they've also got to see a benefit for the change. That's the other thing which I didn't mention. So it's got to be a tangible benefit for change, or people won't embrace and learn about the change. So if we go back purely from the land environment, from the Aboriginal perspective, people have to buy in a reason why they should learn the right thing. And we're fortunate, and back to that, almost back to the 360, back to the start again, with environmental awareness. People are more environmental savvy than 40 years ago. That is a good stage to start buying into and changing and unlearning and learning the Aboriginal perspective of how to look after the environment. Because people are more environmental ready, compassionate, I mean, and understanding. Let's now put in the Aboriginal perspective and show it as an alternative, and not criticise what we see as the wrong beliefs, but sharing another perspective, I think, is very important, and providing the evidence why the difference is, we have a difference as Aboriginal and First Nations people.
And do you believe it's possible that we can have a sustainable, inclusive future?
Do you want the real answer or the wrong answer?
No, I believe.
I, unfortunately, Adelaide may have a better chance, because it's a smaller community, smaller city. I honestly don't have much hope for the 9 billion people around the world. People are way too ingrained and into their belief system. People are very, very, very selfish, and it's all about me, but me looking after me, looking after me, not looking after we. And so we'll need a whole cultural shift. We won't, if it's going to change, it won't be in one generation. It's a long-term project, because you've got to change the current adults' viewpoints, and then the children, hopefully, that are moving through school will need to change their viewpoints, and that's where you maybe second generation from now is likely to see the bigger change, and the third generation, fourth generation, it will be changed.
And the more people we can recruit into listening, telling, and sharing.
I mean, that's the advantage. You know, I've hit on a very important point. It won't work with trying to change patterns if an Aboriginal person or some other person stood up on a platform and said, this is right, you're wrong. Whereas if we can actually get citizens, the population, individuals, understanding, change their viewpoint, and then they share that with their friends, neighbours and work colleagues, and that's where the change will come, rather than somebody directing them, almost like a conductor or a dictator, I should say, saying this is what it is, change your thoughts, whereas their friends influence and so on.
And everybody loves a story.
Absolutely.
Everybody loves telling their story.
If you go down the pub and have... It's all about stories.
It's all about stories.
And the word that resonates in most people's minds, the number one word, is their name. They like to get their mouth moving and to hear their name. Don't they, Sue?
Absolutely.
Great to see you.
This is a good place to end, unless you've got something else to add.
I'm incredibly, incredibly happy about the project you've got going with the Chronicles. It's a lot, should have been done a long time ago, and fortunately in a time now we can have podcasts, which allows dissemination of these stories, and also to keep a record of the stories, which is very important as well. My maternal grandparents, as I said, they were the Scottish. They passed away in 2014, and I tried to get as much stories out of them as long as I can recall, and that's a legacy for my children and my grandchildren, to pass that knowledge and legacy down.
Yes.
And also from the Aboriginal perspective, and just before I finish up, my oldest daughter, when she was about 16 or 15, she came crying to me and said, Daddy, I want to learn so much more about my Aboriginality, and she was crying, tearing up all over it, because she was missing out on what she thought was the fully immersive and understanding of that cultural aspect. She's got a Peruvian side from her mother, and the Scottish Aboriginal side, and it's been very much pulling towards a Peruvian Latin American side from that side of the family. So she felt she was missing out. And it's pretty hard as one from my mob. I'm the only person that I know down here and trying to share our knowledge, which is oral tradition of what we do, to and value to my daughters. And that's as a father. I'm technically on classes of knowledge now, unfortunately. Yeah, unfortunately, a good way and a negative way, but passing on that knowledge to my children and their friends is super important.
That's wonderful. Mm. It's wonderful that your children have access to all of that information.
The heritage is incredibly important, be it whatever your nationality or the ethnicity. Mm. And I think locking out one aspect of your heritage, a parent or a relative locking out one aspect of heritage and saying, no, you don't need to learn about that, it's not important, and that's young people, particularly, a great injustice. Heritage is vital.
Yes.